News. I'm Liz Pelka. That's the sound of U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces closing in on the last small piece of territory held by Islamic State militants in Syria. U.S.-backed fighters pounded the area Sunday with artillery fire and with occasional airstrikes shaking the ground. The Syrian Democratic Forces resumed an offensive to recapture the tiny area in the village of Baghouz in eastern Syria Friday night after a two-week pause to allow for the evacuation of civilians from the area. Once a sliver of land is taken, it would mark the end of a devastating four-year campaign to end the IS stronghold on territory in Syria and Iraq. A few hundred IS militants remain holed up inside Baghouz with an unknown number of civilians. The U.S. and South Korea announced late Saturday the two countries will end annual large-scale joint military exercises as part of diplomatic efforts to achieve complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The decision comes 3 days after a summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Vietnam that ended without agreement to resolve the North Korean nuclear crisis. Anti-government protests continued in Algeria Sunday as President Abdelaziz Bouteflika faced a midnight deadline to formally declare his candidacy for a fifth term as president. Rallies in the streets of cities across Algeria began 10 days ago when Bouteflika announced his intention to run again. The protests have been largely peaceful, but there were reports Friday of violence that left at least one person dead. The presidential election will be held on April 18th. This is VOA News. According to officials, a court in Garowe, Somalia on Saturday sentenced five male teenagers to death for the gang rape of a 16-year-old girl in Galkayo last month. The deputy attorney of Puntland's High Court pointed out the rape case trial happened hours before the gang rape and murder of a 12-year-old girl in the same Galkayo town. Four men have been arrested in that case. The deputy attorney said Saturday's sentence was meant to be both a lesson and final warning for other potential rapists. Afghanistan has given $1 million U.S. dollars to the main U.N. program for Palestinian refugees. Here's more from AP correspondent Zaria Shakali.
Afghanistan's ambassador to Turkey presented the donation to the commissioner of the U.N. Relief and Works Agency in an Istanbul ceremony. Turkey's foreign minister who hosted the meeting congratulated Afghanistan for the donation. Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu said that despite the hardships suffered by the Afghan people, their country has shown the most beautiful example of international brotherhood with its noble act. I'm Zaria Shakili.
Last August, the Trump administration announced it was cutting U.S. funding for the agency. Voters in Estonia are going to the polls Sunday for a parliamentary election. About 26% of eligible voters have previously cast their ballots online. This voter said she missed the online voting cutoff.
I think it influences our state, our country. And I came here because I forgot to vote at the right time through the e-system.
Electronic voting pioneer Estonia was the first country in the world to use online balloting for a national election in 2005. Australia is planning to build a new multi-billion-dollar underground hydropower station in a remote corner of the Snowy Mountains in New South Wales. It's a huge and complex engineering task, and could generate electricity for 500,000 homes. From Sydney, Phil Mercer explains.
Here is how it would work. When solar and wind farms create and deliver more energy than is needed, that spare capacity would in turn pump water between two reservoirs in the Kosciuszko National Park. The water would pass up through 26 kilometres of underground tunnels and pipeline to the higher of the two artificial lakes. When wind and solar can't meet demand for power, water would be released back down the tunnel, turning turbines to generate hydroelectricity. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
I'm Liz Pelka, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Peter Clotten.
Here is the country, landlocked, doubly landlocked, whose exports and imports have to go through Uganda, then Kenya, and most of it. And then somebody closes the border. That is not a sane thing to do under any circumstances.
Tension at the Uganda-Rwanda border, as some call for calm.
At home, I used to play with my daddy's phone, but it's not enough for me to do my coding and to do my scratch. So since we started this program, I've got a chance to do scratch and make cartoons.
Hope for Nigerian internally displaced children as they learn computer skills.
When we smile, the brain wiring gets altered. The chemicals that are released are more positive.
And heart specialists recommend smiling to improve one's health. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Tension continues to mount at the closed Uganda-Rwanda border. The Gatuna border post situation escalated on Wednesday when all cargo vehicles from Uganda were denied entry into Rwanda. But Rwandan Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Sezibera says that while no one is stopped from traveling to Uganda, Rwandans are strongly advised not to travel there for their own safety. David Himbara is an educator, political economist, and author. He's a former economic advisor to President Kagame. I reached him in Toronto, Canada, a short while ago and began by asking him what he made of all this.
I think we are seeing a situation here that no one can really make any sense of. So here is the country, landlocked, doubly landlocked, whose exports and imports have to go through Uganda, then Kenya, and most of it, especially tea and coffee, because tea, they have to go through Mombasa for the auction. So then somebody closes the border. That is not a sane thing to do under any circumstances. Then he's also preventing children and people who go to seek a living in Uganda and who study in Uganda. And by the way, while he's doing all that, he's not even there. The man is all over the place. He did all that when he was in Burkina Faso, spent a whole month traveling, Japan, Germany, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, to watch basketball in North Carolina, Charlotte. This man is not normal. It's simply not normal. He's ruining Rwanda, destroying Rwandan lives. That's really the best I can put it.
Yeah, but given that, as you mentioned earlier, Rwanda is a poor, landlocked country, can Rwanda afford that?
How can you afford it? If you don't send exports and imports and receive imports, what is that? Rwanda imports everything. Basic commodities come from outside. Food, most of it comes from Uganda.
And what do you make of the Rwanda government excuse that Uganda is harassing, arresting, torturing, and deporting its citizens?
Of course, that's nonsense. Because, you see, for the past 15 years, Rwandan refugees in Uganda have appeared, they have been kidnapped, some have been killed. All that time, we were upset by Uganda. Uganda was not doing anything to protect Rwandan refugees. All this time, Uganda was neglecting its international obligations of protecting refugees. So if there is any guilty party here, it's Uganda. So now Uganda now tries to kind of end this. Basically, we have discovered that Uganda's police basically had security services have been captured by Rwanda. This is what we learned by in the arrest of Kale Kayihura, the top security police inspector of police. If there is any guilty party, it's that was neglecting its duty. The injured party here is Uganda. Let me also say this. When Rwanda says that, the citizens of Rwanda should not be going to Uganda anymore because they're harassed or kidnapped or tortured. So the 1 million plus Rwandans in Uganda should then go home. Uganda ask all these Rwandans to go home? If you say Rwandans are not safe, should the 1 million plus people in Rwandan origin be deported or be sent home? Be safe. Doesn't make any sense.
This tension between the two countries has been going on for some time, up to the time you referenced General Kayihura's arrest. How do you see it getting worked out? Are the two leaders capable of working it out and getting to an amicable solution?
Let me remind you that this is not the first time. It's something that the flares up once in a while, every once in a while. But this is the most serious this thing has ever come. You may recall that, maybe a few years ago, Kagame invited President Museveni and they spent several days there, kissed and made up. You know, even then, it's Kagame that begged, and he had the cause of it. So let's wait and see. It's just sickening, really. I don't even want to see how this will end. I don't know. Rwandans of all classes, even the Rwandan elite, the middle class, most of their children go to study in Uganda. So you have the elite, then you have people who go to work there, people who fetch food there. This thing has spared no class, nobody in Rwanda. It's affecting everyone, absolutely.
That was Dr. David Himbara, an educator, political economist, and author. He's also former aide to President Paul Kagame of Rwanda. I spoke with him from Toronto, Canada. Scores of people are believed dead after a pipeline explosion in southern Nigeria. That's according to local officials. The Associated Press reported on Saturday that more than 50 people were missing a day after the early morning explosion on the Nembe Creek pipeline in Bayelsa State. Aiteo Exploration Limited, the company that owns the pipeline, announced that the fire, which ignited about 4 a.m. local time Friday, was finally extinguished on Saturday with no loss of life. But a spokesman for the indigenous groups in the area, Chief Nenga James Eriwario, contradicted that claim, saying the fire was still burning and many people, including children, were missing and they were feared dead. He called on the Nigerian government to respond and investigate the incident. Still in Nigeria, over 10,000 people are living in camps in Abuja after escaping from areas where Boko Haram had made life difficult. Among them are hundreds of children, but now there's a ray of hope as some of these internally displaced children are learning computer coding and animation. For VOA, Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja.
12-year-old Michael Oladimeji fled with his family from Nigeria's Borno State 2 years ago to escape Boko Haram terrorist attacks. Over 10,000 people are living in camps in Abuja struggling for food, water, health care and education. But Oladimeji was lucky. He became one of 100 students his age learning computer coding and animation at a mobile laboratory. The tech curriculum includes writing code with a program known as Scratch.
At home, I used to play with my daddy's phone, but it's not enough for me to do my coding and to do my Scratch. So since we started this program, I've got the chance to do Scratch and make cartoons.
Children like Oladimeji make up the majority of Nigeria's 1.8 million displaced people. But Nigeria's Civic Innovation Lab, a technology hub, runs the initiative which is shaping children's futures, according to program facilitator Angu Kingsley.
Judging from where they came from, they have little knowledge about computers and education generally. So what we're trying to do is to improve on what they already have, the knowledge they have, and build on it.
While only 100 or so displaced kids have benefited so far, the project hopes to expand if it can secure funding, says program head Fanto Fude.
We've been having difficulties in the areas of giving assignments because when we leave, we have to take the equipment. Although the truck is there, they have access to the lab, but they don't really have access to the gadgets.
But for conflict-displaced students like Oladimeji, the chance to learn computer coding could be a game changer. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Anti-government protests continued in Algeria Sunday as President Abdelaziz Bouteflika faced a midnight deadline to formally declare his candidacy for a fifth term as president. Bouteflika, president since 1999, traveled to Switzerland late Sunday for what his office called routine medical checks. Algerian law does not require him to register for April elections in person. Rallies in the streets of cities across Algeria began roughly 10 days ago, when Bouteflika announced his intention to run for a fifth term as president. The protests have been largely peaceful, but on Friday there were reports of violence that left at least one person dead. The nearly 82-year-old president has been largely confined to a wheelchair and rarely seen in public since a serious stroke in 2013. And in Rwanda, the Council of Nurses and Midwives admitted before the Senate that 150 invalid licenses for their professions had been identified so far in a growing scandal over the use of forged supporting documents. Senators unearthed the scandal while questioning the efficiency of some medical practitioners since councils were founded in 2008. The case has been reported to the Rwandan Investigation Bureau for action. Eugene Uimana reports for VOA from Kigali.
Officials from the National Council of Nurses and Midwives appeared before the Senatorial Standing Committee on Social Affairs, Human Rights and Petitions over issues surrounding regulation of the health sector. Senator Naukiryo Jean Wasene asked the officials to explain how the quality of practitioners seems to be an impediment to development of Rwanda's health sector despite the existence of the regulation councils. Why does the quality of education of medical practitioners seem to be fragile, yet it's you who issue licenses to perform the profession? Why do you issue documents to people who don't deserve them? We often see many practitioners prefer to hide themselves in pharmacy or on reception, or those who are in labs seem not to be sure of their results. Innocent Kagabo, the chairperson of the Nursing and Midwifery Council, admitted that most candidates who fail licensing exams resort to forgery. He said they found that some studied non-science subjects such as tailoring, plumbing, and construction, among others. We are not afraid to admit that through the assessments we have carried out, we also noticed the poor quality education of some of medical practitioners. We kept on digging deep and found that many have forged the documents. We have reported to the Rwanda Investigation Bureau that issue. But for a long-time solution, we are also working with the High Education Council to teach and examine our members. We agree, we found that forgery shakes the services, hospitals deliver. Medical practitioners councils were appealing to the Senate to help them knock on the cabinet's door for salary raises and good staffing plans. Kagawa said medical staff are overstretched, which accelerates many medical errors. Because personnel are very few in most of the public hospitals, you will find that there is no specialist. Everyone does what is urgent. This plus the fact that you find a doctor who has been working for decades without recognizing his experience and increasing the salary worsens the service we are sworn to deliver, which is to save lives. Though medical practitioners around Africa have stood up requesting their betterment, the Senate kicked back this claim, urging councils to sort out malpractice first. The law establishing the National Council of Nurses and Midwives was published in the Official Gazette in 2008, but the council started issuing practicing licenses in 2012. Some 15,281 nurses and midwives are registered with the National Council of Nurses. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You're listening to VOA and this is Nightline Africa. Exercise and diet are keys to a healthier life, as many studies show. But there is something that may surprise you. Heart specialists also recommend smiling to improve your health. VOA's Carol Pearson explains.
Okay, one, two,
Kendra Martin
three,
is taking photographs of three little girls in chiffon dresses. As they twirl around, Martin tells them to smile.
All right, big smiles.
And in this case, a giggle. Big grins and giggles pay off on camera. The girls may be too young to have heart problems, but the smiles can promote heart health. Dr. Anand Chakalingam is a heart specialist at the University of Missouri Healthcare. He tells his patients to smile.
When we smile, the brain wiring gets altered. The chemicals that are released are more positive.
Chakalingam's advice is supported by a number of studies. He says smiling is a first step in fighting stress and its ill health effects. When you feel stressed, your body releases a surge of hormones, including adrenaline and cortisol. Adrenaline increases your heart rate and blood pressure. Cortisol, the primary stress hormone, increases sugars in the bloodstream. If you are truly in danger, these hormones can help. But too much of these stress hormones too frequently can lead to heart disease and stroke. People who are stressed look for ways to cope. The American Heart Association says smoking, overeating, or drinking alcohol as a way to reduce the stress can harm your heart and other organs.
Once people smile, they are relaxing. This relaxation directly lowers blood pressure, improves sugar levels in the blood.
Chakalingam tells his patients to smile 20 times an hour. It might seem like a lot, but it doesn't involve drugs or have any negative side effects.
If we are smiling, we are breaking that link between stress and the health.
Smiling is something Martin does to improve her photography.
Waking up in the morning with a smile on my face, it's going to put everybody in a better mood.
And it provides a little boost to everyone's heart health. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Australia is planning to build a new multi-billion dollar underground hydropower station in a remote corner of the Snowy Mountains in New South Wales. It's a huge and complex engineering task and could generate electricity for 500,000 homes. From Sydney, Phil Massey reports.
The plan to generate power in the Snowy Mountains is ambitious. Here is how it would work. When solar and wind farms create and deliver more energy than is needed, that spare capacity would in turn pump water between two reservoirs in the Kosciuszko National Park. The water would pass up through 26 kilometres of underground tunnels and pipeline to the higher of the two artificial lakes. When wind and solar can't meet demand for power, water would be released back down the tunnel, turning turbines to generate hydroelectricity. The task ahead for engineers is significant. The tunnel would have to pass through five different types of rock, as well as several rivers and creeks. Before the five-year project goes ahead, a study will determine if the hydroelectricity plan is both feasible and economically viable. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison believes the scheme will become a reality.
It delivers as part of our sustainable plan to meet our emissions reductions targets and ensure that the renewable power revolution that has been going on in Australia over recent years is able to be maintained through the firming power support that comes out of projects like this.
The project revives memories of the original Snowy Hydro scheme that was at the time Australia's biggest engineering project. Construction began in 1949 and ended in the mid-1970s and is considered to be a true nation-building enterprise. Recent research by the Australian National University suggested that at the current rate, Australia could expect to be 100% powered by green energy sources within 15 years. Wind and solar dominate the renewable power sector, although the majority of Australia's electricity is still generated by coal. The centre-right government has said it won't phase out the use of coal-fired power generation in Australia, despite concerns that fossil fuels are contributing to global warming. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Simple DNA testing kits are becoming more popular and affordable. Today, genetic tests can show where your family came from, give you insight into your health, and even reveal unknown living relatives. For VOA, Nastasia Jumain has the story, which is narrated by Anne Rice.
Today, many companies around the world offer DNA testing with no need for needles or blood tests. For roughly $100, anyone can send their saliva sample to a lab and get a detailed genetic profile a month later. Sometimes the results are surprising. DC resident Jason Lambro thought he had no brothers or sisters. He got a DNA ancestry test just to learn more about his family background, but ended up finding a sibling.
And as I'm just kind of flipping through one day, saying, oh, let's see the new results of today. Dink. Congratulations, you found your half-brother. And it was a bit stunning, to say the least.
Many customers are less surprised when DNA helps them figure out where their families came from. Joan Bedurza is a doctor and geneticist. She tried all of the DNA testing companies available in the U.S. and says they showed nearly identical results. With more tests, these companies expand their database of genetic markers around the world, which gives them clearer insight into where families originated.
A lot of the tests that are done by the companies looking at ancestry are looking at something called important single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs. So they have chosen important places where we know variation occurs in different people's DNA and compare it to the pattern, say, in people from Africa or people from Eastern Europe or people from the Middle East or different Asian countries.
That helped Jana, who didn't know much about her family, just that her grandfather was born in Crimea. But the test helped her find distant relatives living in Ukraine.
This is just unbelievable. When I saw the results, I started crying. It was a big emotional shock. I thought, oh my God, all these people live there, and here I am now.
Jason Lambro was also elated to find more of his family.
This is the first time I've ever had a brother, so I've kind of gone through the range of emotions. Actually, the first email he ever sent me was, hey, little brother. And I could feel the hairs in the back of my neck stand up like, call me little, what are you talking about?
The men haven't yet met in person, but have big plans. After all, there is a lot they need to catch up on. For Nastasia Yevmen in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
This is the Voice of America in Washington, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. And still to come in the second part of the program, sports. A commentary by Dr. James Jonah and our Sunday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now on to Nightline Africa Sports. Draws for this year's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Poland are out. South Africa were drawn in Group F along with six-time winners Argentina, two-time champions Portugal, and regular campaigners South Korea. African champions Mali, who finished third at the 1989 and 2015 global tournaments, are in Group E with 2011 champions France, Panama, and Saudi Arabia. Senegal, semi-finalists in 2015, are in Group A alongside host Poland, 2003 third-place side Colombia, and Tahiti. Two-time runners-up Nigeria will open Group B against Qatar, then face United States before finishing the group campaign against Ukraine. The Under-20 World Cup will be held across six venues between May 23rd and June 15th of this year. Mali beat Senegal 3-2 on penalties to win the 2019 Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations in Niger. Ghana, the only African team to have won the Under-20 World Cup, lifting the trophy in 2009 with a penalties victory over Brazil in the final in Egypt. Thus, Africa will be represented in the 2019 FIFA Under-20 World Cup in the following groups. In Group A, Poland, Colombia, Tahiti, and Senegal. Group D will have Qatar, Nigeria, Ukraine, and USA. Group E, Panama, Mali, France, Saudi Arabia. And Group F, where there will be Portugal, South Korea, Argentina, and South Africa. In boxing, UK's Tyson Fury will take on another fight before a rematch with WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder, according to the WBC president. A second fight had been anticipated since their first meeting in December, in which Wilder retained his belt after an enthralling draw in Los Angeles. On Tuesday, the WBC president, Suleiman, said the rematch would be at a later date. The other recognized World Heavyweight Championship belts, WBA, IBF, and WBO, are held by Britain's Anthony Joshua. Joshua will defend his titles against American Jarrell Miller at Madison Square Garden on June 1st. And in tennis, Roger Federer has won his 100th ATP Tour title at the Dubai Tennis Championships. The 37-year-old Swiss, a 20-time Grand Slam champion, beat Greece's Stefanos Tsitsipas 6-4, 6-4. Federer's first ATP title came at the Milan Indoors on February 4, 2001, when he beat a Frenchman, Julien Bordeaux. He is just the second man after American Jimmy Connors in 1983 to reach the landmark. Federer broke Tsitsipas, who is 20, in the first game of the match before serving two break points at 5-4 to see out the first set. The Greek, who will break into the world top 10 for the first time on Monday, held his nerve in the second set until 4-4 before Federer broke his serve once again to wrap up the final in 69 minutes. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sport. It's Sunday here on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from the continent.
Everybody come, make you follow me, go. Make you follow me, they feel the rhythm. Say you know I'm capable, oh. I am capable in every season. Make you dance and feel the flow. Make you drink and party with me. When the body don't start to play, say you know I'm the melody key.
And anything you need, I got ya. And don't do be. You got, I got the answer.
What you feeling inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, Odoviapa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see person. I want you to dance, go. Yeah, I want you to dance, go.
want you to move slow, low, low.
Guys, we want to run down. Now when the sun done gone down, but this place nothing like done down. The intention not to paint the town brown. Salon class the hard with one chill. Anybody gon' come for here, they know the drill. Hey, oh yeah, make it chill. For real.
I'm not a jolly, nine matter, and don't do be. Oh yeah, ba. So baby, scare baby, come closer.
I don't bite, cause any question you got, I got the answer.
What you feeling inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, Odo Viapa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when I see Yapa, I know they see person.
Hey, hey.
I want you to dance, go. Yeah, hey. I want you to dance, go. Yeah. I want you to move slow, low, low.
Asking for more, you don't need any reason. Just follow the beating. This year ain't no prison, so follow my leading.
Inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when I see Yapa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when I see Yapa, I know they see person.
Oh, I'm making a dance, go.
I'm
jua jina kwangu sawa. Ila usizidishe ukaja ntoa dina tapagawa. Mimi mwenzako vumilivu sina we haya. Takuganda kama rubani we wako chawa. Kweli mapenzi ninayo, pesa na mali sina. Ila ni maisha yapitayo, kesho ntakuwa na jina.
Everybody run. in a day. Then they carry me play. One man in a day. Everybody run away.
And that was our Sunday music spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of The Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa. One man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Many Africans who are advanced in age, particularly, may be wondering why tens of thousands of Algerians for the past 2 weeks have been demonstrating across the country against the decision to put President Bouteflika for a fifth term. After all, President Abdelaziz Bouteflika was a renowned freedom fighter in Algeria, a young colonel who fought against French colonialism in Algeria. He became foreign minister of Algeria and was extremely popular throughout the African continent. He even became president of a General Assembly of the United Nations. The truth is, the people are demonstrating not so much against the person of President Bouteflika. They are concerned about the system of government, an opaque and sterile system, which some have dubbed a cabal, consisting of one of his four brothers, the military, the business people, and security forces. They have been governing the country, and the president himself has remained out of sight and without speaking since he had a stroke in 2012. So this is what they are protesting against. They want to know that they have a president they can see and they can talk to. This is similar to the concern that many Nigerians had when President Buhari was absent for a lengthy period abroad on health grounds. They wanted him to either resign or to return to Nigeria. So this is the main point of the demonstration. And they believe, particularly the youth, which represents 70% of the population, that the poor economic performance of the country may be due to this opaque system of government, although the fall down in oil price may account also for the economic turndown. Also, they feel Algeria does not have the same influence it used to have in North Africa and in African politics. See, this is the change they're looking for. But there seems to be some determination within the National Party, the National Liberation Front, to proceed with the nomination of President Bouteflika for a third term. What is also clear that Algerians do not want to return to the bloody civil war in Algeria, which lasted from 1992 to 1999. In fact, Bouteflika, who was out of the country during that civil war, was brought back in 1999 to have as a form of stability, and he was made president and has been for 20 years president of Algeria. And the truth is, there has been some stability. Algeria escaped the so-called Arab Spring, and things have gone well for the social living in the country. So what should now happen if the NLF party proceeds to nominate President Bouteflika as the president? Will the demonstration cease? And if they do not cease, will they change their course, as we have seen in many of these demonstration, whether in France or in Sudan, they develop to other things. Will this bring instability? Most people who know that Algerians believe this is not what they want. But this is now a time for the NLF to really come out and explain to the people why they can have an opaque government, why they cannot find an alternate to President Bouteflika. It is a very challenging time. But luckily, thus far, we have not seen outside powers trying to intervene in Algeria to bring about some kind of regime change. And that's all for the good. Let the Algerians try to work this out among themselves. Algeria is a very important country in Africa and within the African Union. And all Africans should wish them well, that they should try to work out this difficult period in their government. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From all of us here at Nightline Africa, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, Producer Saida Hamdon, I'm Douglas Impuga, wishing you a very good evening.
This is VOA News.